You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Welcome to the maiden voyage of the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, and I'll be pleased to be joined alongside two outstanding co-hosts for the next 6 weeks as we get you ready for May's NFL draft. What will the Eagles do armed with six draft picks, including the number 22 overall selection? And first, I'll introduce the co-host. To my right, to your left if you're watching on the camera, is Bo Wolf, who did an outstanding job as the co-host of the Film Room free agent segments that we had on Philadelphia.com, along with Greg Cosell. And you'll also be doing segments for the draft with Greg as well.
That's right. And if you're listening and not watching, I'm the handsome one with a lot of hair.
And to my left, to everyone's right out there, is Fran Duffy, who produced the segments. Fran's the former video director for Temple University, and he also did the outstanding Eagle Eye in the Sky, all 22 access pieces during the season. So finally, everyone gets to hear and see a little bit more of you, Fran.
Yeah, finally I'm on this side of the camera.
So the big news here on Thursday is that the Eagles, they acquired running back Darren Sproles from the New Orleans Saints for a 2014 fifth-round draft pick. It was the one originally acquired from the New England Patriots in the Isaac Sopwaga trade. And it seems like now the Eagles have another dynamic weapon to add to the offense. And I think what we're going to do with this podcast here is look at the Eagles' offense and what they might do on that side of the football heading into the draft. And fellas, with Darren Sproles now in the mix, do the Eagles maybe still need to add another running back? Is there another receiver they got to the mix? Because with Darren Sproles in the fold, they have someone who could do both and add to the return game as well.
Yeah, I think the way that Chip Kelly and Howie Roseman look at this offense, there's nothing they could do in the draft on offense that would really surprise me, short of maybe trading down to 31 and taking a center like the Cowboys did last year. Other than that, there's really nothing they could do that could surprise me. You saw last year, even though the defense maybe needed more help, they took a tackle in the first round and a tight end in the second round. And as Howie Roseman has talked about for the last 2 years, they've really committed to best player available. And even though you've got three outstanding wide receivers on the roster right now and a stud tight end, if a guy like Eric Ebron or whoever your wide receiver du jour is in the stacked wide receiver class is there at 22, I would be surprised if they didn't take that guy.
Yeah, it's all about playmakers. It's about versatility and playmakers. And it's funny, all for the past 2 years, all we've heard Chip Kelly talk about is the importance of big guys. Big people beat up little people. And then we go and we trade for one of the smallest players in the NFL. So Darren Sproles, I think, is going to be a great fit. And I think you're just going to build on that in the draft. Whether, like you said, it's Eric Ebron, any of these tight ends, Jason Marrow. None of these receivers would surprise me either.
I saw an interesting point on Twitter today during the reaction to the Darren Sproles stuff. And say what you will about Bucky Brooks, but he brought up the idea that lots of teams played cover one against the Eagles last year, and if McCoy and Sproles are on the field at the same time, maybe defenses can't do that. Can you speak to that, Fran?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things, especially in the middle of the season, that really, really hurt the Eagles, was that teams would line up and they'd press in, play man coverage right across the board, cover zero, cover one. And now when you have so many different versatile playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, it's really hard for teams to do that. Who are you going to cover if you've got Darren Sproles, Jeremy Maclin, DeSean Jackson, Riley Cooper, and LeSean McCoy on at the field at the same time? You can't. Most teams are not going to be able to play man coverage straight across the board against that combination.
Now, who are some of the big receivers that could be there at number 22? You mentioned the tight end from North Carolina, Eric Ebron. Who are some of the other tall, physical playmakers that could be available if the Eagles wanted to go in that direction early in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, one of the favorites is Kelvin Benjamin, the kid out of Florida State. I mean, he's a big kid. He's about 6'4". He didn't test incredibly well at the combine, but, one of the guys who's surprisingly fluid for a guy his size. And one of my favorite parts, Chris, you and I were at the combine. He told a story about being younger, being a child, and chasing rabbits, down in Florida, and how that really kind of helped him with his agility and the way he moves. And it shows on the field. He's surprisingly fluid for a guy his size. You would imagine that Mike Evans, who's the other really big receiver that people want, is not going to be there at 22. But, you never know. It's the NFL draft. Anything could happen. And like Bo said, in such a deep receiving core, you never know who's going to go at what point.
How much do you factor in Benjamin's slow 40 time? He's also, even though he's a redshirt sophomore, he's a little older than you would expect. How do you look at him?
40 time, I think, is a little bit overrated, and especially in terms of wide receivers. Really, it comes down to short area quickness and the ability to separate. And Benjamin showed that he's able to do that. He's a pretty savvy route runner for a guy his size. And he's really only been playing football, his junior year of high school, senior year of high school. So he's only been playing for a few years. I think he's a guy with, you know, with some upside.
Now, because we're talking about receivers, discounting Tavon Austin from last year, if Tavon Austin was in this class and you were balancing that last year's class versus this class of receivers, I think 8 of the top 9 guys would be from this year's class, something like that?
Yeah, something like, I mean, the other guy that I really liked last year was Justin Hunter, who ended up going to Tennessee. But, you know, other than that, I mean, this group is stacked. This is as good of a position group, not just receivers, as good of any position group that I've ever seen in any of the drafts that I've been, you know, following. It's, you know, isn't that long in the grand scheme of things, but it's really unbelievable when you look at all these guys that are in this class, and a guy like Davante Adams, who, you know, in most classes is going to be talked about as a mid-first round pick. You might be able to get him in late round two. So that's why, and again, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but that's why people say, oh, look, what is this? Is he a second round pick? Well, that's why I don't really like using that term, because this year, Davante Adams is a second-round pick, almost assuredly. But any other year, he may be a first-round pick. And, you know, that's just one example where, you know, kind of tagging a guy that way is kind of unfair to that prospect.
So the Eagles handled the wide receiver position, at least leading into free agency, by re-upping Riley Cooper, re-upping Jeremy Maclin. But, of course, with Chip Kelly and Howie Roseman, if the best player available at number 22 is a wide receiver, it won't be a shock whatsoever to see him go in that direction. But Howie Roseman has said that it's a unique draft class when it comes to the wide receivers, and that there's going to be someone they like at each round of the draft. So it'll be interesting to see if they do indeed at some point in the draft take a receiver. And not just if they take a receiver, what type of receiver? Is it another Darren Sproles type, someone who can do a lot of things in the offense? Is it someone who could be dynamic? Who are some of those type of playmakers, maybe not a first-round guy, but guys who could be available in the mid-rounds, who are ones who could catch the ball, run the ball, maybe add a little spice to the return game as well?
Well, you know, there's, like you said, there's a wide variety of receivers and really a lot of guys that have a different wide variety of skill sets. So guys that would fit that mold, like a Darren Sproles, a guy that you can move around the formation, I would look at a guy like someone that Chip knows, and that's D'Anthony Thomas from Oregon. A lot of people are going to see him as a running back. I think he's on the smaller side, so you question whether or not he could take the pounding of running, you know, as a running back in the NFL. But he's got receiver skills, and they moved him around the formation quite a lot at Oregon, and he's shown the ability to be able to be a good route runner, and he's able to catch the ball away from his frame. And people talk about, oh, well, what's the difference between him and, say, a Dree Archer? Dree Archer, both obviously very explosive.
Running back from Kent State.
Running back from Kent State. Dree hasn't shown the ability to be that kind of receiver on the outside yet. He hasn't shown the ability to be able to consistently catch the football. He's not as far along as a route runner at this point. So really, I think that's where those guys kind of separate. Is not that Dree's a bad player. I think Dree is obviously a very good, can be a Darren Sproles type player in any offense. But you know, that's kind of where you can say, okay, D'Anthony Thomas, you can maybe project him to the role as a receiver at this point.
Everybody talks about how Sammy Watkins is the best and most explosive receiver in this draft, but he wasn't the best receiver in the ACC.
I would assume you're talking about the guys at the powerhouse of Wake Forest University.
Michael Campanaro, baby, come on. He might have, you know, midget hands from what he measured at the Senior Bowl and the Combine, but you know, he can do a lot.
Yeah, he did. And you know what? He did okay at the Senior Bowl. You know, obviously he's got good hands and he's a good route runner. He's been very productive at Wake Forest despite their quarterback situation over the last few years. But you know, Campanaro, it's a shame because a lot
Tanner
of these
Price is no Riley Skinner.
No, correct. And so really, I mean, this receiver class, when you look at the seniors, there were a lot of good senior receivers, you know, going into the fall, that with all of these junior that came out, I mean, you look at this junior receiver class and the Odell Beckhams and the Jarvis Landrys, obviously we talked about Kelvin Benjamin, all these guys just...
Brandon Cooks is a guy you like a lot.
Brandon Cooks, Bruce Ellington, just names just filled up that chart. And really, I mean, a lot of these guys, Michael Campanaro, he may struggle to be drafted. Jeff Janis from Saginaw Valley, he may struggle to be drafted. Any other year, you're talking about that guy as a, you know, fourth, fifth round pick. He's going to go late day three if he goes at all.
So bottom line, Campanaro at 22? Probably not?
Never be surprised.
Okay. Yeah.
So. Disclaimer, yeah. Bo Wolf is a Wake Forest alumnus.
Correct.
Okay. Just have to get that out there for those of you who do not
But
know.
I'm completely unbiased.
No.
Clearly.
So obviously, receiver position, we've delved into, you know, running back. This could be the year, and it's been coming up the last few years, that there may not be a first-round running back. Is this the year where it actually doesn't happen? And certainly it's not going to be a point of emphasis for the Eagles with LeSean McCoy. Now you have Darren Sproles in the mix along with Chris Paul, Bryce Brown. But nonetheless, is this a year where the running back position has become so devalued that you're not going to see a Carlos Hyde, a Trey Mason, a Bishop Sankey, one of those guys get picked in the first round?
Well, it'll be interesting because obviously you look at, and this is something we talked about with Greg Cosell, Bo, you look at the two, what people believe is the two best teams in the NFL, the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. What are they built on? They're built on strong running games. You look at the Eagles, who obviously were one of the most dynamic offenses in the NFL, led the NFL in rushing. So obviously I think, you know, there's an importance on the running game. The New England Patriots, when they're, you know, when they're clicking on all cylinders, that's when they've got Stephen Ridley and Shane Vereen and LeGarrette Blount, and they're able to run the ball. So I don't know that the devaluation of the running back position is as drastic as some has made it out to be, but do I think that any of these guys could go in the first round? I think there's probably one guy that I would say maybe has a shot, and that's Carlos Hyde out of Ohio State. Obviously had some off-the-field issues early last year, but it's built like Eddie Lacy, but he's probably better on third down, which obviously is the most important down on football. He's a good blocker, reliable in pass protection. He's actually a pretty reliable receiver as well. So may not have the power that Eddie Lacy had, but he's doesn't go down on first contact. And like I said, he can be an issue on third down where he can catch the ball out of the backfield and stay in and block for you.
It's weird that we've started this with the offense and we haven't even talked about the quarterback position at all. But only three guys on the roster right now, Nick Foles, Matt Barkley, and G.J. Kinney. I think we expect the Eagles to add somebody to the mix there, whether it be a veteran in free agency or a guy in the draft. Obviously, we would be a little surprised if they took a guy at 22, but it's not unreasonable. What are your thoughts on the quarterback class in general?
Well, the quarterback class, I mean, everyone talked about, you know, 6 months ago as if it was the best since, you know, 83 or right. Best since, you know, at any point. But really, I mean, I think people have kind of cooled off on it a bit. No one knows who's going to go first overall. There's probably about four guys that are talked about as being possible first-round picks. It's a good group overall. I mean, it's another group that's very, very deep. There are going to be guys that are talented that some may talk about as a second- or third-round pick that may not get drafted. But it's really going to come down to, you know, what your flavor is, what you're looking for at the quarterback position. And really, it's something that we still don't really know what, you know, Chip Kelly and Howie Roseman may be looking for. Do we know if they're looking for mobility? Possibly, but you look at Matt Barkley last year, I think really one of the traits you're starting to see is maybe decision-making may be the trait that you're most looking for, and that could be a guy who runs a 4.4 or a guy that runs a 5.4. So really, I think you're looking at decision-making, accuracy, and who fits that mold. Well, there's a few guys. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they decide to go that direction, who they end up taking.
As long as it's not a 46-year-old like Brandon Whedon. I would like to say that I have never been more right about anything in my life than Brandon Whedon's career path in the NFL. I like to hang my hat on that.
Your Michael Campanaro at 22 may challenge that.
That's true. How about the mid-round guys, though?
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, people are talking about in that area. You know, you have a guy like Logan Thomas who has all the physical tools you would want. You know, the guy's 6'5", 6'6", you know, runs well, was one of the best testers at the combine, has the strongest arm of any of the quarterbacks in the class. You know, he's a guy who I think a coach or a team's going to look at and say, I can work with him and make him more consistent, you know, develop his accuracy and make him a better player.
Have you seen that mock draftable chart of Logan Thomas, if comparing his athleticism to other tight ends, his top two comparables are Gronk and Jimmy Graham? Would you think about moving him there?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he's got enough tools that you would want to at least give him a shot at quarterback, and that's what happened at Virginia Tech. I mean, he was considered to be one of the best tight ends coming out of high school that year.
But he didn't play tight end.
He never played tight end, but it was the same issue where, you know, in high school, he's a big kid, but I don't know if he can be a college quarterback. Hey, he's probably the number one tight end in this class. He got to Virginia Tech, and they let him play it out. They gave him a shot, and he stuck. So, I think you give him a shot. You let him see what he can do, and I think he's got the tools to be able to make it work. But it all comes down to scheme and fit and a lot of the off-field things that we're not privy to. But, I think Logan Thomas could be a quality NFL quarterback.
We are pleased, and I'll use that word, you know, a little loosely there, but pleased to have as the first guest to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, the great, the illustrious Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net, a good friend to not only PhiladelphiaEagles.com, but Eagles.com as well. Tony, nice. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm honored, and it's always a pleasure to be back with you guys.
We appreciate you always being our plan B, Tony.
There you go. Whatever works.
Tony, we're delving into what the Eagles could do potentially on offense. And obviously, we're all talking about the number 22 pick in the first round. And obviously, there are so many dynamic wide receivers and pass catchers in this draft. Who are some of the guys that you're looking at that could be a fit for the Eagles if they want to go in that direction with the 22nd pick?
I would think the top three guys, Sammy Watkins of Clemson, Mike Evans of Texas A&M, and Marquise Lee would be off the board by then. You know, two guys to keep an eye on, Odell Beckham Jr. of LSU and Brandon Cooks, especially of Oregon State. You know, Cooks is that sort of Chip Kelly type of player. He's a versatile guy. He's a dynamic receiver who consistently challenges the vertical game. Game is going to have defensive backs playing back on their heels. He's an explosive returner. You can use him to run reverses. Doesn't have the great height, but he is a game-changing home run hitter whenever the ball is in his hands. Odell Beckham's probably he's got better size, probably a little bit better as a next-level receiver. Doesn't have the same return skills, equally as fast as Cooks on the field. I don't know. They really didn't run too many reverses with him at LSU, but he still brings that dynamic, game-changing element with him. So I think if they're going to look receiver late in round one, Odell Beckham of LSU, Brandon Cooks of Oregon State are two guys that I think would be good fits for that system.
Tony, do you think that that Marquise Lee is locked into that three spot? Could he be there at 22?
The only way he's there at 22 is if there are some red flags on his knee. I mean, he right now, from where I sit, is the most underrated receiver in this draft. If you go back to the August of 2013, you know, we're talking about Marquise Lee as a potential top 12 pick. He had a bad knee. He played through a bad knee. The knee issue is still lingering. So if he's there at 22, it could be an issue where that knee is not fully healed. And to my mind, that would be great value for the Eagles. You may not get some quick rewards during the 2014 season, but once that knee heals, I mean, he's a good underneath receiver. He's not so much the game of the home run hitting threat as, say, Sammy Watkins or the guys I just mentioned are, but he is incredible running after the catch. That is where his greatest skill is, and you know, that's something that would also fit the Eagle system.
Tony, at the Combine, Howie Roseman talked about the importance of blocking at the receiver position. Are there any playmakers that are on your radar that really excel as blockers on the perimeter?
Well, you got to look at the bigger receivers. Obviously, Mike Evans has done a good job blocking down the field. He had to. You know, because you never knew what Johnny Manziel was going to run the ball or take off down the field, so he does a good job blocking. Allen Robinson, not so much of a playmaker. You know, you're kind of contradicting. The playmakers are usually your smaller, speedier guys. Your effective blockers, anyway, are more the bigger possession receivers. Allen Robinson, who's going to be a second-round pick out of Penn State, he's a very good blocker. Jordan Matthews of Vanderbilt, another second-round pick, he's a terrific blocker. Devonta Adams, who, you know, if the Eagles are looking for a wide receiver on the second day of the draft at Fresno State, he also gets the job done as a blocker.
Tony, Howie Roseman talked about how unique this draft is with the depth at the wide receiver position. In all the years that you've covered the draft, how would this wide receiver class compare to any of the ones in the past?
Well, it is deep. I think you have to break it down. When people think that it's hear from pundits that it's an incredibly deep receiver draft, you know, they immediately think about Calvin Johnson. Doesn't have the great talent at the top. I mean, Sammy Watkins is a very good receiver, but he's not a special talent like Calvin Johnson. Really what happens is where the Eagles start to draft late in round one, that's where the great value in this receiver class is, in the second, third, fourth round. I think you'll be able to get a receiver out of the fourth round in this year's draft who can produce as a rookie in the NFL as your third receiver, as your slot receiver, as your number four receiver. So it's not top-heavy as far as quality is concerned, but the quantity starting from late round one through the fourth round is incredible.
It sounds to me like you're describing Michael Campanaro.
Could be. I mean, although I think he's more of a fifth-round guy, but if you get a guy like Campanaro who, again, you know, he's not spectacular, but he's good in all areas. I mean, he can line up in the slot. You throw him the ball, he's going to catch it. He's going to give you effort as a downfield blocker, has some return skills. Not the biggest guy, he's not the fastest guy, but he's just a very good football player. You get him in the last day of the draft, he's a guy who I think can contribute as a rookie.
Tony, are there any other of those Senior Bowl guys that, you know, before the juniors declared may have been a mid-round pick, but now you're looking at them as a possible late-round or even undrafted free agent that can come in and make an impact?
I think most of the Senior Bowl guys held themselves steady. I don't think anyone's really dropped off the radar. I think a lot of them, as we saw, you know, the 3 days we were at practice, really improved their stock. So I don't see anyone that's really dropped off as far as their, because underclassmen have entered the draft.
The guy at the Senior Bowl who jumped out to me was Kevin Norwood from Alabama. We know that Chip went down to the Alabama Pro Day. Obviously, they have a ton of prospects for him to be looking at. But I thought he was pretty impressive, made some plays on the ball, high points the ball. What did you think? And Fran, what did you think?
Well, I think, number one, he's carried that momentum, because then he went – let's start again. Let's start from the beginning. Entering the season, Kevin Norwood was graded as basically a streak-free agent by NFL scouts. They basically gave him a grade, which is he's off the roster by the first cut. He doesn't even make the 60-man roster. He has a terrific season. As you guys pointed out, and as we saw on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, he was outstanding during the Senior Bowl. Then he goes to the combine, and he runs in the 4.4s. No one knew he had the speed. Yesterday was their pro day, and again, I heard he ripped it up at the pro day. He caught everything that was thrown to him, because A.J. McCarron was trying to show off arm strength and really try to put effort to get speed on the ball, and a lot of the passes were wayward. Well, you know what? Norwood was getting vertical, was laying out, was making all kinds of receptions, showing just incredible hands. So now this guy, who really just 8 months ago, 9 months ago, was graded as a street-free agent, has probably moved into the second day of the draft. No, definitely could end up in that third-round area. I know the New Orleans Saints fit him. Again, he's one of those guys that he's going to be a good underneath receiver who can create after the catch. So if the Eagles like him, you know, you're going to probably look in that third-round area for him.
You're staying in Tuscaloosa, Tony. You talked about A.J. McCarron. What's the latest buzz with him, and where do you think he ends up on draft day?
I think he's basically has remained level from where I thought all along. He's a second, he's a third, maybe second round pick. He's not the best quarterback in the draft, as he likes to think. He doesn't have the great physical skills. You know, McCarron did a very good job last season in the sense that he lost almost his starting offensive line, who went on to the NFL, but he remained consistent. He doesn't make mental mistakes. He's more of a game manager, McCarron. He's not a guy who you really can build a whole game plan around. He's a guy who needs certain pieces to move the team forward. I think right now he's probably going to be the sixth or seventh quarterback off the board. You got your top four guys in Bortles, Bridgewater, Derek Carr, my board, Manziel, Jimmy Garoppolo is moving up. Then it's going to be McCarron, maybe Mettenberger if he gets healthy, because a lot of people love his physical skills. Going to fall, like I said, somewhere in that mid-second, maybe early third-round area.
Tony, how consistent do you think the quarterback rankings that you just put out are amongst teams? And obviously, different teams are going to be looking for different scheme fits, but it seems like if you were to read reports, you look in the media, it's a wide variety of where the quarterbacks are ranked, where they might go in the draft. In your estimation, do you think in NFL inner circles it's a lot more concrete, it's a lot more defined?
Not really, because there are no sure things at this year's quarterback class. You know, you go back a couple of years ago, everyone knew Andrew Luck was the number one quarterback. Everyone knew that Robert Griffin was the second quarterback. Everyone knew that Ryan Tannehill was moving up draft boards. This year,
everyone knew that Brandon Whedon was 60 years old.
Well, there you go, with a bad shoulder. You know, this year, it's sort of, you know, you got Blake Bortles, who really made a late charge up draft boards and has got a lot of upside. You got Teddy Bridgewater, who's been very consistent over his college career, but has got some, you know, some size limitations and maybe some scheme limitations. You got Johnny Manziel, who's all over the board. I mean, you hear everywhere from a top five pick. I know some teams that grade him as a third, fourth round choice. So he's all over the place. So I definitely don't think at this point in time it's concrete. You got to remember, teams who don't need quarterbacks or teams who are not looking for quarterbacks early are not going to put that much effort into grading the quarterback. So to answer the answer to your question, from my point of view, is no.
Well, lastly, Tony, is there anyone that's maybe people aren't talking about but really you think could make a next step and be a better pro player than a college player?
Oh, absolutely. Brent Urban, a guy that, again, we saw a little bit of at the Senior Bowl. I mean, Canadian-born athlete, just starting to develop as a football player, has got great size, 6'7", close to 300 pounds, a tremendous athlete. The problem with Urban is he's been struggling with an ankle injury throughout his senior season. In fact, he struggled with it at the Senior Bowl, only practiced, I believe, 2 days while we were down there. But you watch him play, I mean, he is a big, explosive athlete. He can rush the passer. He can stop the run. He's a guy who can play as a two-gap end. You can use him as an inside, the under tackle. You can even use him over right tackle in a four-man front. He's got amazing upside. It's just a matter of he really didn't develop because of the ankle injury, and he really doesn't have that much experience. So he's one of those guys who I think is going to be underdrafted. I think at the top of his game, if he had really filled out and been healthy last year, he's a first-round pick. He's probably going to fall into the second day of the draft, but if you get him hitting on all cylinders, and as he continually to physically matures, you're going to have yourself a dynamic player who is a three-down defensive lineman that you can use at different spots on the defensive line.
I like Brent Urban a lot. We watched him at the Senior Bowl. I think he'd be a good fit for this defense. But we have been talking about the offense all day, Tony. Can you give us someone on offense? Come on.
You know, on the offensive receiver situation, let's look at Brandon Coleman of Rutgers, a guy who, you know, when you come off of his sophomore film of 2012, looked like a guy who had potential first-round possibilities. He's a big game-controlling receiver, had some deceptive speed, was able to make the receptions in underneath coverage, also was able to occasionally get down the flanks, had off-season knee surgery, really wasn't 100%. They had quarterback problems at Rutgers, was almost a non-factor last year, decided to enter the draft anyway. So he goes from a guy who in August of 2013 was a potential first-round pick. Now he's in the third or fourth round. Sort of like a Marquise Lee sort of situation where he's just got to get healthy and he's got to develop his game. And if he does, Brandon Coleman, who's going to go in the third or fourth round, could actually develop into a number one receiver at the next level. So if you're looking for that sort of guy on offense, I would look towards Coleman, a big possession receiver who's got some deceptive speed. And he's got a solid game. It's just he had the knee issue last year and he had quarterback issues at Rutgers.
Tony Pauline, you can read more of his insights on draftinsider.net. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony Pauline. He's breaking news left and right as the pro days are in full swing, getting ready for the 2014 NFL Draft. Tony, thank you very much for joining us here in the first edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Thanks for having me.
That's Tony Pauline from draftinsider.net. Fran Duffy went to Twitter to solicit fan reaction to find out who you want to see the Eagles take with a number 22 selection. And yes, we are trying to make this the offensive-based show looking at the Eagles, but all the selections have been for the defensive side of the football. And we'll go right into the first one. At the top, Manny Chang tweeted to Fran, he wants Calvin Pryor, the safety from Louisville, brings energy and athleticism, can hit, reminds him of, and Sal Palantonio said this at the draft, and I cringe, at the combine, I should say, and I cringe as soon as he said it, reminds me of Brian Dawkins. I'm like, why does every safety have to immediately be associated?
It's going to be that way for a while.
Brian Dawkins. I understand that. But yes, Calvin Pryor, loved the highlight hit tapes I saw. Fran, your thoughts?
Well, it was definitely by far the most popular answer. You know, I put it out last night, about 9:30 or so, and I got about 50 responses within 5 minutes, and just about half of them were Calvin Pryor. So obviously he's a guy that fans are very interested in, a big hitter. Not necessarily a box player, but definitely a more physical safety than a ball-hawking, middle-of-the-field type player. But, Calvin Pryor is a guy that's high on everybody's list. We talked to Sal Powell at the Combine, like you said, and that's who he wants the Eagles to get. And, I wouldn't say that they're wrong. I think Calvin Pryor is a good player.
Throughout this process, you talked about the fan reaction, but even in the mock drafts, which, I mean, this far out, they mean nothing. There probably will be one or two picks correct from those, but Calvin Pryor has been the most popular guy in those. I think Mel Kiper's newest mock draft came out today. He's got Calvin Pryor to the Eagles. I know the other guy who we're going to talk about here in a second is Ha-Ha Clinton Dix from Alabama. How do you compare those two guys, and do you think Pryor goes first?
Well, it's going to come down to what teams want, because both guys are comparable in talent level, but I think Ha-Ha is more of a space player. So say what you want about today's game, and today's game is about playing in space. So while Pryor can play in space, that is more of Ha-Ha's strength, and Pryor is probably a little bit more physical than Clinton Dix. So, you know, it really comes down to what you're looking for at the safety position. And there's another guy there that's probably better in space than all of them, and that's Jimmy Ward out of Northern Illinois. So really it's going to come down to what teams want. And I think, by the way, while we're talking about him, I think Ward actually could possibly sneak into round one.
Because I have heard the name. I've seen some of the draft analysts on Twitter talk about him, and they basically say that if he played at a big-time program, he would be in the conversation along with Clinton.
If he was an inch taller, 2 inches taller, same thing, right?
There's one play I just want to take you guys to, and that's a play they were playing Northern Illinois against Kent State. in DeKalb, Illinois, and Jimmy Ward is lined up in the slot against Dree Archer. Dree Archer runs a fly route, and he sticks with him the entire way and picks off a pass down the field. So Jimmy Ward is a guy who you can play. I think some teams may even see him as a corner because he's got that kind of coverage ability, but he comes up and he plays the run. Like I said, he's really one of those guys that you can move around. Definitely he has the athleticism to stick with slot receivers and tight ends.
I think he came in under 6 feet, but I'm not positive.
I'd have to come back and look at that. Yeah.
That was surprising about Calvin Pryor is he was listed at 6'1 at Louisville, but he came in about 5'11.
Yeah, and Pryor's a guy who kind of came out of nowhere for the media because really no one really talked about him all through last year. Really, it was his teammate, the senior, Hakeem Smith, who kind of got more pub. And then as we kind of got through later in the year is when Calvin Pryor's name started buzzing, and then he ends up on Mel Kiper's big board, and that was that. So, no, Pryor's a good player, but, you know, like I said, he's definitely the favorite among Eagles.
My biggest problem with Jimmy Ward, my only problem, is that after practicing for 4 years against Jordan Lynch, I think the strength of an NFL arm is really going to take him by surprise.
That's very well maybe true.
What are you trying to say there about the quarterback?
I think you can read between the lines. Who's the surest tackler of those three guys?
It's definitely between Pryor and Dix. I mean, both those guys, I wouldn't say either of them are bad tacklers. You know, both of the guys who come up and hit you, they're both, you know, effective in the run game. I would say that Pryor is the bigger hitter. He's definitely the more explosive hitter of the two. Both are pretty reliable in the run game, though. Both can run the alley and make a tackle in the flat and can be effective in the box. So, again, both those guys are very good players, well-rounded safeties.
Howie has talked about this over the last couple of years, and it's obvious with some of the picks the Eagles have had, but safety has sort of become the most difficult position to project, maybe quarterback, you want to say, but because when a safety comes into the NFL, it's not just about their physical tools. It's are they going to be in the right place? What you know, can they run a defense upstairs mentally? Can you tell any of that stuff when you're watching the film?
Well, it's one of those things. Again, we've been producing our Scouts Notebook feature throughout the winter and spring here. Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we talked about with all those guys with, you know, evaluating the safety position was why it was so difficult to project safeties from college to the NFL. There's a lot of different reasons. Obviously, you can watch a game on a safety, and there may be five plays where he makes a play. You can say, okay, that translates to the NFL in a good or bad way. It's very rare that you see a guy, okay, here he is running the alley. Here he is playing the deep middle, and he's got to make a play to the sideline. So there's five or six plays, really, over the course of a couple games that you say, and you're like, okay, yeah, he can do it. But again, it's such a small sample size that you really have to watch 7, 8, 9 games on a guy before you really get a good idea of, okay, I'm confident this guy's going to come in and make a play at the next level.
Okay, so safety is not the only position that Eagles fans want. We're going to stick, of course, with the defense. J.J. Ferg, 99 on Twitter, tweeted at F. Duffy, free Fran Duffy right here. He wants Notre Dame nose tackle Louis Nix III. What do you think of him as a possible fit there for the Eagles in terms of not just the position but the value there at number 22?
Well, Nix is going to be a guy, again, we haven't seen too many of those big, massive 6'6", 335-pound nose tackles go early as we have seen, you know, in years past. You know, you look at guys like Josh Chapman a few years ago out of Alabama. He went in the fourth round. You know, Terrence Cody out of Alabama. I'm just thinking the
John Jenkins last year.
John Jenkins last year, exactly. So, you know, those guys typically are mid-round picks, but Nix moves surprisingly well for a guy his size. Now, medical is going to be a big thing for Nix and how teams view him. He's had some, you know, some issues with his knees and things of that nature, but was definitely one of the winners of the Combine interview room, if you remember his interview at the Combine. Definitely a charming kid and a great guy to follow on Twitter. You know, he's a funny guy and a guy that fans really kind of cling to because he's a big guy with that kind of athleticism. So it'll be interesting to see if the Eagles go to that direction. Would I say that it's too early at 22? No, I wouldn't say it's too early. You know, but where he ends up will be interesting because of that trend over the last few years.
Next one here, Stashington, D.C., obviously wants to go with the best player available route, but if not, Anthony Barr from UCLA has been very intriguing because he's only played the position for a couple of years, and you're getting a wide variety of opinions on Twitter. You read draft experts about, you know, what his ceiling is, whether he's maxed out, whether there's room to grow. But what would you think of him putting him in this 3-4 scheme?
I mean, from what I can tell, that'd be great if he slid, although I'd be worried if he slid to 22. Why did he slide to 22? I know that you know, Josh Norris from Roto World had his mock draft about a month ago, and he projected the Eagles trading up to, I think, 12 to take Anthony Barr, and I could see that. I mean, right now they only have 6 picks, so I would be surprised if they traded up right now unless they get more picks because this is such a loaded draft. But, I mean, adding Anthony Barr, adding a young stud pass-rushing outside linebacker to this defense, I think is something that all Eagles fans want. Obviously a former running back, so he's got some room to grow. He's a little bit raw on defense. But Khalil Mack, I mean, coming into during the college season, we were talking about Anthony Barr as a top 3, top 5 pick. It seems like Khalil Mack has risen above him and Anthony Barr has dropped a little bit. But I know you, friend, I know you think that that's a little bit unfair. I think you think that Barr still has all the tools.
I think so. It's really been interesting to see how Barr has kind of slid down the scale a bit. I think people, you know, kind of see Khalil Mack. And obviously, you know, you see what he did against Ohio State. He was dominant in the first week of the season against the Buckeyes. So people kind of look at that game and say, hey, there he is against his best competition. With Anthony Barr, I don't see why people in the media have kind of gone down on him a little bit, because athletically, he's everything you want. He's a guy who can bend on the edge. He can run. He's got great closing speed. And one of the things I really like, and I was really most impressed with watching Barr, is that despite the fact that he's only played for a couple of years, he really shows a knack of being able to set the edge and flashing color to the outside shoulder and force guys inside to those linebackers. Michael Kendrick's younger brother is a linebacker for the UCLA Bruins, as well as Jordan Zumwalt, a guy who I really like. But you know, Barr has shown a knack for being able to sustain the edge, play a role in the run game, and obviously rush the passer. And obviously he's got a ways to go in terms of technique, in terms of strength, and being able to anchor and hold up. But if you're looking at upside and where a guy's going to be 3 years from now, I would say Barr probably has more upside than a guy like Khalil Mack, who, you know, may be better right now.
Is it tough? And I don't want to get too deep into defense. We'll do that in future episodes. But is it tough to project a guy like Khalil Mack, who some people think could be the number one overall pick, simply because of where he played?
I think so. I mean, if you take Jadeveon Clowney and you put Jadeveon Clowney in Buffalo, what's Jadeveon Clowney doing in the MAC? You know, if you take Anthony Barr and put him there, what is Anthony Barr doing there? So what's really going to be interesting, honestly, with both those guys, with Barr and MAC, is that, you know, a lot of these teams at the top, it's not a, you know, there's not really clear needs for pass rushers. And really the teams that need pass rushers are 4-3 teams, and both of those guys stood up in college. So now you're projecting those guys to say, okay, they're going to either play with their hand on the ground or they're going to play as a Sam linebacker. So is that something that you're going to spend a top 10 pick on? So it'll be really interesting to see how those teams you know, handle that situation. But no, I have nothing against, I think Khalil Mack's a very good player, but you know, I would say that Anthony Barr definitely has higher upside, and like you said, it is tough to project regardless.
And then the last comment came in from at Waka Flash and said, basically, with the way the Eagles have set themselves up in free agency with acquiring Darren Sproles, the Eagles could take the best player on the board, and that's something that Howie has preached throughout the draft process, going back to the last couple drafts, basically that no matter what, you got to take the best player available because you don't know what your team is going to look like a couple years down the road. Fellas, I think that's it. Our maiden voyage.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Of the Journey to the Draft podcast, I only had one bad take on the open. So
that's all right.
Outside of that, smooth sailing for the most part here. The Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Hey, chime in on Twitter. I mean, this is a show for you, the fans. We want your reaction, your comments. What do you guys want to hear? So that's going to do it. So for Bo Wolf, for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you again down the line.